So what I want to talk about this morning is a thing I called the unexplainable sin. The question of what on earth was happening with Moshe and with Aaron. What on earth did they do wrong? Why were they punished? I'm gonna load up the story sheet right now. I just want to show a couple of fantastic lines from a couple of the Mefarshim to show them struggling with this issue. We'll go through a bunch of the classic approaches and some of the classic problems with them, and then I'll make a suggestion at the end. There's no question that the Chumash emphasizes very heavily that Hashem finds something absolutely unacceptable in what Moshe and Aaron did, no less than four times in Sefer Bamidbar and then later on in Sefer Dvarim. The Rosh Hashem tells Moshe or tells Moshe and Aaron they're not going to get into Eretz Yisrael. Either because lo ha'amantem bi, you didn't have enough faith in me, merisem espi, you rebelled against my command, kasher merisem pi, you rebelled. So this guy got wiped out. This should somehow say al asher ma'altem bi. Some of that got messed up over here. You betrayed me, besoch b'nei Yisrael. But it's not clear what on earth any of this is from. Yakedus Yitzchak, who writes his commentary similar to Abarbanel. In fact, his descendants accused Abarbanel of plagiarism. So he begins his commentary just like Abarbanel does by asking a number of different questions on whatever topic it is that he's discussing. He has a bunch of questions on the problem of Meimriva, and the fourth question he asks, he says, "This is the strongest of all. Take a look." V'hiya kasha chazaka mikulam b'chato shel Moshe Rabbeinu v'ansho. Says, it quotes the Gemara, sharei ha-shulchan, we have the table, v'harei basar, we have the meat, v'harei sakin lefaninu, we have the silverware. In the Kol we're learning mukta during the afternoons, and one of the things we've seen is that the only silverware they used was a knife until relatively recently. That was, your fork and knife all in one. So, because we have a table set, we have the meat, we have the knife. Be'in lanu peh le'echol. One thing we're missing is a mouth to eat the food. Torah makes it very clear. We know what happened. We know the story of Meimriva. We know the complaints of Bnei Yisrael. We know the reaction of Moshe and Aaron. We know how the water came about. We know Hashem's response to Moshe and Aaron. We know the outcome of what happens. The only thing we don't understand is the most important part of the whole thing, right? What do you need for a meal? So food is good, a table is good, cutlery is good. One thing you really, really need for a meal is to be able to eat it. So Kedus Yitzchak says, we don't understand the most basic thing. We can go on forever talking about Meimriva, but we don't understand the most basic thing, which is what on earth did Moshe and Aaron do wrong? And Shadal, commenting on this, has, this is a bit of a trivia piece. If you ever want to quote Mefarish, who says, my policy is not to try to answer this question. That does not usually happen, but here's an amazing example. We have to read this whole thing inside because it's awesome. Shadal commenting on the pasuk of Ya'an Lohemantem Bi, when Hashem says to Moshe and Aaron, you are not going to go to the land of Eretz Yisrael because you did not believe in me, right? You didn't have enough amunah just now a few minutes ago. So Shadal writes, Moshe Rabbeinu chata chayd echad. There's one sin that Moshe Rabbeinu has. Is that the one sin here in Chukas? Is that like one sin in Moshe's career? I don't know. But there's one sin. You read all the Mefarshim, and what do you discover? It says that Mefarshim he misu alav shlosha asar chatan v'yoser. If you go through Rashi and Ibn Ezra and the Ramban and the Chizkuni and the Sfarno, you, by the end, you'll come up with 13 different things that everyone is suggesting that Moshe and Aaron did wrong. Every Mefarish who comes to discuss this parsha has to explain the biggest obvious question: what on earth did Moshe and Aaron do wrong? So what do they do? They're creative. We have chidushim. Normally we're very pro chidushay Torah. So here there's one case where we're not, because he says everybody comes up, everybody discovers a new avera that Moshe and Aaron did. Kihine dan yitzchak abarbanel hevi aser deos. Abarbanel, you look at his parish, he quotes 10 different views of Moshe did wrong. He quotes an 11th, which we'll talk about at the end of this year. Varash bats b'maginavos hosif da'asacheres. There's a 12th. Varam ban hosif o'dacheres. 13. V'ulayod kamadeos acheres nechtevu. If I would go through the rest of my bookshelf, I probably could find more than 13. Vani lo yadatin. But 13 is enough. So he says, we've by trying to explain this whole parsha, rather than come up with convincing, compelling explanations, all we do is just throw more averos at the wall and basically hoping that one of them is going to stick. And he says, not only is that not really doing a good job of explaining what's going on, but it's also incredibly disrespectful to Moshe and Aaron. Like the lowest moment, one avera, and they and everybody tries to come, we come up with like 30 different things. I mean, you could look at like 1 hour of our lives with the scrutiny that the Mefarshim applied to Moshe and Aaron here, we probably could come up with 13 terrible things that we've done since we woke up this morning that we didn't even think about. So he says, therefore I have a policy. If anyone has ever seen something like this, let me know, because I do not know of anything like this. Asher Alkin, Kol Yamai, Nimnati, Mehamik, HaChakira, B'davar Hazeh. My whole life, I never delved into this question, into this problem. I had a policy. I am not going to try to answer this. Meyira Shema Mitoch HaKirosi, out of fear lest from my analysis, Yetzei Li Perush Chadash, I'll come up with a new Chiddush. Normally, we're very pro Chiddushei Torah. But here, I don't want a Chiddush. I don't want to come up with a new idea. V'nimtzasi Gam Ani Mosif Avon Chadash HaMoshe Rabbeinu. Because what's all that's going to come about if I try to explain what's going on? We have 13 of Averos, so I'm going to come up with 14. We can barely come up with one thing that Moshe Rabbeinu did wrong. He says, you go through everything, and we just come up with a pile of Averos that we're throwing at Moshe and Aaron. Has anyone ever seen anything like this? Because I never have. I think it's absolutely wild. Okay, good. Glad to know I'm not the only one. So let's take a few minutes and quickly cycle through some of the main views in the Mefarshim and some of the main problems that other Mefarshim deploy to attack those views. So that's the most famous one, of course, is Rashi. Rashi, that you were supposed to speak to the rock and instead you hit the rock. Right, says Rashi, you're supposed to sanctify my name. She'ilu dibarta melasela. If you had spoken to the rock, then there would have been a Kedesh Hashem. The people would have said, look at this rock, which can't speak or hear, but it fulfills what Hashem commands. So we should do that. And that moment was lost. Instead of the rock voluntarily producing water when Moshe speaks to it, we made it produce water at gunpoint. Right, that's Rashi's classic view, which is a number of the Mefarshim. By the way, both Akedas Yitzchak and Shadal sign on to this view. Other Mefarshim do as well in various different ways. The Ramban does not like this answer. Why? Well, there are a few problems with it. And the first problem with it, I don't think the Ramban asks this question, but it's difficult to explain where Aaron's sin was. That's like the go-to kasha on most of the answers that are given for what the sin was, because we have to explain why not only Moshe is punished, but Aaron as well. And not only that, but in a sense, Aaron is punished more severely than Moshe, because Moshe at least leads the people for another 6 months. Aaron is going to live for another parak. So where on earth is the sin of Aaron? Because Moshe, in a moment of anger, hit the rock instead of speaking to the rock. So you're going to say that, well, Aaron should have interceded, and Moshe saw Aaron, Aaron saw Moshe take the stick, and Aaron should have told him, you know, Moshe, I think you're supposed to speak to the rock instead of hitting it. Okay. But the Ramban points out there are a bunch of other problems. First of all, if the problem was that Moshe was supposed to speak to the rock and not hit the rock, well, why does Moshe have the stick in the first place? It's not because he just decided to take it. Hashem told Moshe to take the stick. The Pasuk Ches, Kach es hamata, take the stick with you. Vakel es ha'edan, gather the community and gather the congregation together. V'dibartem el ha'sela. If the problem was speaking to the rock instead of, hitting the rock instead of speaking to the rock, why does Hashem tell Moshe to take the staff in the first place? It's one of the Ramban's questions. Rav Hirsch has like a brilliant response to this question, because Rav Hirsch says, you know, this staff has not been around for a long time. Happens to be, by the way, the Mefarshim disagree, and this is interesting, which staff did Hashem tell Moshe to take? We think of the staff from the Haggadah. Tetzach Hadash Bechab, the staff of Mitzrayim. That's what Rav Hirsch explains, we'll say in a second. But some of the Mepharshim say, no, what's the staff here? The staff is actually the staff from last week's Parsha. It's the staff from Aaron becoming selected as reestablished as Kohen Gadol, the staff that flowers in front of the Mishkan. Anyway, Rav Hirsch understands that it's the old staff from Yetzias Mitzrayim. And he says, we have not seen this matah in a long time. We actually have not seen this matah since the battle against Amalek, since Moshe took the staff up when they were at Rephidim fighting against Amalek. We didn't see the rest of Sefer Shmos. We haven't seen it all of Sefer Vayikra, and everything happening in the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar until now, from Bamidbar through Korach, we've never seen the staff. It's like we're bringing back the greatest hits from 40 years ago. The staff comes back. And the first suggests the point is that Dafka Moshe was not supposed to use the staff. The point is supposed to be, this is an era, and we'll come back to this idea a little bit later, this is an era where Bnei Yisrael are supposed to be transitioning from the world of the miraculous to the world of the natural, and therefore Moshe was supposed to Dafka take the old staff, but not use it. That's the suggestion that Rav Hirsch wants to make. Okay, so we could say that. The Ramban does have another objection to Rashi's view that the problem was hitting instead of speaking, and he just says, what really is the difference between the Kiddush Hashem of a speaking miracle and the Kiddush Hashem of a hitting miracle? Bottom line is that if water comes out of the rock miraculously for Klal Yisrael, will it really make such a difference for their behavior whether the water came out from being spoken to or being out of the rock being hit? And we can actually point out there's a very good proof for the Ramban, because the Pasuk says that Hashem's name was sanctified as a result of the miracle of Mei Meriva. So on the one hand, the Pasuk says that Moshe and Aaron blew it. Somehow they were supposed to sanctify Hashem's name and they didn't. But on the other hand, the Pasuk says that Hashem's name was sanctified. So clearly the miracle, even of hitting the rock and that putting out enough water to feed 600,000 men, women, and children, was enough to be a Kiddush Hashem. So those are some of the questions that the Ramban brings on Rashi's view. The Ramban continues, and he quotes the Rambam. Second classic position, the Rambam in the Shemona Prakim says the problem was not what Moshe actually did with the rock. The problem was that Moshe got angry. The problem was the way that Moshe lashed out against the people. He said, Shimuna Hamorim, listen, you rebellious people. The Rambam talks about anger as the worst of the character traits. Normally, Moshe Rabbeinu is the humblest of all people. For Moshe to lapse into anger is totally unacceptable, says the Rambam, and that's why he has to be punished immediately. What's ironic about this is that the Rambam, take a look at this, the Rambam says that the problem was Moshe's anger. And the Ramban gets angry with the Rambam for making this suggestion. The Ramban says, Elu Dvar Avzal Hosif Hevel Al Havalim. More futility. He has no patience whatsoever for this answer. Why? What are the problems with the suggestion that the sin of Mei Meriva was that Moshe Moshe got angry? I mean, count the ways. Number one, it's not what the Pasuk said. Right? All the Pesukim that talk about Hashem punishing Moshe and Aaron, it's because they didn't listen to his command. Hashem Marisem Pi, you didn't listen to what I told you to do. Not about them getting angry independently of that. Furthermore, if Moshe got angry, says the Ramban, what about Aaron? Aaron Cohen did not get angry. It was Moshe who says Shimuna Morim. Aaron is his normal, peace-loving self the entire time, writes the Ramban. The Ramban continues, did I put this on the sheet? No, I did not. The Ramban says, furthermore, it's not the first time that Moshe has gotten angry at Bnei Yisrael. He's gotten angry at them in Baloscha. He's gotten angry at them in Shlach. He's gotten angry at them in Korach. He got angry in Parshas Kisisa. He's gotten angry before. Why is he only being punished now? And furthermore, why has Moshe gotten angry here? Why did he get angry last week and angry the week before and the week before that? Because every single time he has a good reason to get angry. A Klal Yisrael, after 40 years of being carried through the desert, are complaining once again about water. Okay, we've been there. We've done that. Stop complaining. Come to Moshe. We'll daven. Hashem will take care of you. We got a 39 and a half year track record. Moshe Rabbeinu in Sefer Dvarim, he says, is going to tell the people in his goodbye speech where he's about to die. So he's about to die because of his sin, alleged sin in Chukas. Now it's his goodbye speech. If the problem was that Moshe is now going to die, because he got angry at the people at Mei Meriva. Then says the Ramban, why on earth is one of the Pesukim in Moshe's speech, Mamrim Hayisem im Hashem Elokeichem, right? You've been rebellious from the day I met you back in Parsha Shmos in Egypt until now in the plains of Moab. That's anger. Mamrim Hayisem, you've been rebels. Shimuna Hamorim. Ramban says that can't be the problem. And the last point the Ramban makes is he says as a Pasuk in Tehillim, which explicitly criticizes B'nai Yisrael. The Pasuk in Tehillim says, Vayaktsifu al Mei Meriva, the people were angry and problematic at Mei Meriva, Vayera la Moshe Bavuram. And Moshe was punished as a consequence of what they suffered. So the Ramban says, you put it all together, I'm just going to close this because I don't think we don't need this anymore. The Ramban says, put it all together, it's very, very difficult to sustain the argument that the problem with Moshe and Aaron's behavior was that they got angry. Okay. So, a few other views that are out there. The Ramban continues. At the end, the Ramban gets into the Kabbalah and the Derech HaEmes. Before he does that, he says, on the level of Pshat, the answer that he thinks makes the most sense comes from Rabbeinu Chananel. Rabbeinu Chananel is a very careful read of the Pasuk. Moshe and Aaron tell B'nai Yisrael, Hamin hasela hazeh notzi lachem mayim. Shall we produce water for you? Shall we? Hamin hasela hazeh notzi. Shall we produce water for you from this rock? What was the problem, says Rabbeinu Chananel, says the Ramban. Moshe and Aaron should not be taking credit for the miracle. It says, Notzi lachem mayim. It should have said, Hamin hasela hazeh yotzi Hashem lachem mayim. Will Hashem produce water for you from this rock? The problem was Moshe and Aaron taking credit for a miracle, which is being done by the Marshal. That's why he says it's called Me'ila in Sefer Dvarim. That's why it's called the betrayal, because Moshe and Aaron are taking credit for what Hashem is doing. If you look in the VBM, so Yoni Grossin has a piece. Truth is, this is also kind of in similar themes from that piece from Rav Hirsch also, and from the Nitziv. Say that we have to put this in the framework of the time where the people are specifically trying to transition out of the world of the miraculous and into the world of the natural. And the whole point is to realize that Hashem is all-powerful. Regardless of if you see open miracles or not, to realize that nothing is coming from any person or a malach. It's a Ribbono Shel Olam, whether you see it openly or whether you don't see it openly. So anything that dilutes that message of Hashem being all-powerful at this point in time is particularly problematic. Okay, so that's the suggestion that Rabbeinu Chananel makes. Abarbanel doesn't like it at all because he says, hold on a second, Moshe was not taking credit for the miracle. It was a rhetorical question. It said, "Hamin hasela hazen notzi lachem amayim." Right? Shall we bring a water? We're not the ones bringing water after the rock. Of course, it's Hashem. It was Hashem. Moshe is not taking credit for I am the one bringing forth water out of the rock. Everyone knows that this is a miracle from Hashem. He just does not find it compelling. Okay, so that's that view. Look at some of the other mafarshim. As we saw before, well, we have 13, so I'm going to go 13. But Rabbeinu Bachaya says the problem was that Moshe struck the rock once instead of twice, which implies that the stone, that Hashem is weak because there needed to be two hits. Okay, so that's difficult for several reasons. The most obvious one, again, going back to the classic problem, even if there's a problem with Moshe hitting the rock, what did Aaron do wrong? What did Aaron do wrong? Difficult. Rabbi Yosef Albo in the Sefer Ikrim, this is quoted by the Meshach Chachma, says the problem was that Moshe and Aaron were not confident enough to go to the rock by themselves. They should not have gone to the Moed. They shouldn't have davened. They should have just gone straight to the rock. Sisach the Barbanel ask on this. They say, well, there are plenty of other times where Moshe turns to the Ribbono Shel Olam instead of just doing a miracle by himself. Meshach Chachma has an answer to that. He says, yeah, well, the game has changed after Korach when Moshe unilaterally called down for a miracle for the earth to open up and swallow Korach. But in the day, it's a pretty pressing question. There's a more modern idea. I think it starts with the Sfas Emes. And now it's really been picked up a lot recently. If you look on the VBM, Rav Elchanan Samet has this suggestion, Rav Moshe Lichtenstein develops this suggestion. They argue that the problem was not a sin at all. The problem was that the whole event of Mei Meriva demonstrated that there was a divide. There was a generational gap. The event of Mei Meriva, Moshe and Aaron's response to the people demonstrated that they just were no longer fit to be the leaders of this new generation. And the idea is a lot going for it, because it is difficult to see what sin there is b'chlal. It also puts this whole issue in the framework of the death of Miriam, which happens at the beginning of the parak, and the possible idea that with the loss of Miriam, Moshe and Aaron lost a point of connection with the people. But there still are severe problems with this suggestion as well. Let's mention two. Number one, as we saw, the psukim, like it or not, did make it seem pretty clear that there was not just a leadership problem, but that there was some active rebellion against the word of Hashem. Now, it's hard to find what that is, but Torah said, Hashem maris empi, you rebelled against my voice. Hashem ma'altenbi, you betrayed me. Just a fact that, you know, the old generation is not able to lead the new generation should not have led to terms like that. It doesn't really fit the words of the psukim. And we can also ask that if the idea is that Moshe was just out of touch with the people. You know, last generation, Moshe's generation, he knew. He understood the generation of Yetzias Mitzrayim, but he just did not understand this new millennial generation about to go into Eretz Canaan. Well, if you look at Sefer Devarim, one thing is extremely clear, that Moshe actually has his finger exactly on the pulse of Klal Yisrael. He knows this nation down to a T. He says, I know you guys. I've known you from the day that I met you in Egypt until now. I know what's going to happen. I'm going to die. You're going to go to the land of Eretz Yisrael. You're going to sin. You're going to worship Avodah Zarah. You're not going to listen to me. You're not going to drive out the Canaanim, right? Like, everything that happens in Sefer Shoftim, Moshe predicts precisely in Sefer Devarim. Read Sefer Devarim carefully. By the end, he says explicitly, I know for a fact that you are going to worship Avodah Zarah. He knows his people. He makes that very, very clear, the whole Sefer Devarim. So to argue that he just was out of touch with the people, it's challenging. Let's say it's challenging. So, to close, I'll present the suggestion of Abarbanel, and then try to go with his basic idea, but we're gonna in a different direction. Abarbanel says, "Look, what are we gonna do? All I have is the psukim in front of me, and the psukim make very clear two things. Number one, Moshe and Aaron are being punished because they sinned. Number two." There is no identifiable sin in the psukim to justify them being punished. So, what do we do with this internal contradiction? So, says the Abarbanel, it must be that, you know, okay, of course we know that Hashem is very exacting in his treatment of tzaddikim, and Moshe and Aaron are the greatest of all. So, the bar for punishment is very low. So it must be that what's happening here is the Moshe and Aaron over 40 years have had some averos. There have been some missteps that Chazal identify from already Moshe Rabbeinu at the burning bush going forward. Aaron HaKohen, of course, at the Chet HaEgel. So Abarbanel says, the idea was not that there was an avera here that got them, you know, let's say it's of 0 to 60, so it's Moshe and Aaron, so they only need to get to 10 to be punished. It wasn't from 0 to 10. Okay, over the course of their career, they got into 6 or 7. There's some minor avera here, but that is enough to push them over the top. That's the suggestion that Abarbanel wants to make. That it was not, and we cannot find an avera here. There was an avera, but not an avera here that's enough to justify the sin. We have to go back and say this is just building up on what's happened in the past. Okay? Maybe we can suggest slightly differently. Because the bottom line, the Abarbanel faces the same problem as everyone else. Number one, Aaron doesn't seem to have sinned at all. And number two, the psukim do focus on the rebellion here, right, in this moment, Asher Marisem B. So maybe we could just the following. Maybe it's not a coincidence that Para Aduma, the ultimate mystery, comes before the ultimate, right, the ultimate halachic mystery, the Para Aduma, is given to us right before the ultimate narrative mystery, which is, for some reason, the death of Moshe and Aaron. And by the way, there's another mystery that's sandwiched right in between Parah Aduma and Moshe and Aaron, which is the death of Miriam. Why on earth does Miriam die? Why doesn't Miriam get to go into the land of Eretz Yisrael? She did not sin with the Meraglim. She did not sin with Memeriva because she's not alive anymore. There is no reason for Miriam, not the old Tamara, to go into the land of Eretz Canaan. None whatsoever. Why doesn't she get to go? Torah does not give us an explanation at all. So maybe the idea over here is like kind of twofold. You know, number one, the Torah, maybe out of kavod to Moshe and Aaron, maybe because this is the whole point of the story, is that the death of Moshe and Aaron is a point to see Tziduk Adin. It's the point to see Atzur Tamim Palo. It's a point to see acceptance of the ultimate difficulty, the ultimate tragedy, which is death, which doesn't seem justifiable. Here's the judgment. We can't understand it, but we accept it. Why did Miriam die? I don't know. What's the point of Paraduma? I don't know. And what was the sin of Moshe and Aaron? We're left with no idea. All we do see is what their response is. And this, by the way, is particularly true. Maybe this can be why Aaron is the biggest mystery of all. Why on earth does Aaron die for the sin of Memeriva? Well, Aaron is the ultimate figure for us who exemplifies what the Jewish response to ununderstandable tragedy is. Vayidom Aaron at the moment of the death of his sons Nadav and Avihu. That was the moment, right? As the Soloveitchik talks about, what's the Jewish response to tragedy? Not the response of the why, but the response of the what. We don't understand, we're not going to understand. The question is just, what do we do going forward? In the case of Moshe and Aaron, what do they do going forward? If you go into the Psukim, you know, just take 1 second to open it up, because it's amazing when you take a minute to think about it. How do they respond? Take 1 second, then we'll close. Tefarim 20. Screen share this guy up over here. Good. Right. Pasuk Yud Beis. Hashem says to Moshe and Aaron, Yana Shalom, Amantim Yilak Tishin Le B'nei Yisrael, Lachin Lo Sevi Ol HaKal HaZel Aretz Sher Nasati Lachem. A 40-year dream of Moshe and Aaron is wiped out in an instant for no understandable reason in this pasuk. Right? They've been dreaming of bringing the people into the land. All of a sudden, blink of an eye, it's gone, and we can't understand why. What happens immediately afterwards? Do Moshe and Aaron complain? Do they rebel? Do they hesitate? We know Moshe is going to Davin, but in the moment, what's the response that Moshe and Aaron have? Silence, acceptance, and moving forward by Yishlach Moshe, Malachim Mikadesh, Malach Adon, Ko Amar Achich Yisrael, etc., etc. We're going to go forward. The nation's going to go forward with or without us. And you have this amazing point here of acceptance of the ununderstandable. What was the sin? We have no idea. We trust the Midas Hadin. We trust there was something. We realize our limitations, that we do not know what it was. And we go forward. That's the response of Moshe and Aaron. I think that might be the lesson that the Torah is trying to give, giving us this description of the ununderstandable sin of Moshe and Aaron, specifically in the context of the ununderstandable Chukas HaTorah of Paradu. We'd love to hear if you guys have any thoughts about this, because I have not seen it suggested anywhere, but otherwise, wish everyone a good job, and thanks for coming on this morning.